You're listening to the U LaSalle Student Entrepreneurship Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Abubo, giving you the insider's guide to the lives of our students, alumni, and other high-impact innovators of the University of Utah campus, our Utah community, and our world. Today, I'm speaking with Kyle Cameron Gray, author of The College Entrepreneur.
Thanks so much for having me, Julie.
Take us back to before college. Take us back to high school. Who were you then? And do you see in retrospect that there were signs that you would be on the path that you were on now?
I really have no idea that this was the life that I would find myself in 10 years ago. Yeah, I'm 28 now, so I never saw myself as much of a business person. I imagined somebody involved in business or entrepreneurship to have kind of a blue starched shirt and a tie sitting at the corner office of a big glass building somewhere. And that life never really intrigued me that much. One thing that I do think really helped me grow in my entrepreneurial spirit, per se, is I was a musician. Throughout high school and in the early days of college, I had played in a couple of bands. I had been a singer-songwriter, wrote a bunch of my own music, experimented a lot with the guitar, recording music, some keyboards, some synths, put together my ideas in interesting ways. And so this kind of cultivated that, just create things, try it, put it out there in front of people, and, you know, see what happens. And so that was a really interesting way to kind of test my skills and
riff it, as it were.
Yeah.
You wrote, figure out what motivates you and use that to drive your learning. What motivates you, Kyle, and how does it drive your endeavors?
This reminds me of my very first days at college. I was an undecided major, and I had really no idea what I wanted to do. I even remember one of the lead classes with Carolyn Ownby, writing a paper. I can't remember exactly what the prompt of the paper was, but I decided to just write this kind of lamenting thing, like, I don't know what I want to do. And the only thing that really stood out to me as something interesting was the international studies major. I was like, oh, there's a chance to travel. I had done a humanitarian mission to Africa the summer before I started attending the university. And so I decided I wanted to keep traveling. And travel has been kind of a central theme in a lot of the interesting things I've done with my life since then. I've done some exchanges when I was an undergraduate student, and a lot of what I've done to develop my business and my entrepreneurial skills were focused around skills that I could use to grow a business from my laptop and make money from anywhere in the world. And so travel's always kind of been at the core of that, and that's what I discovered kind of motivates me and pushes me forward to improve myself and to add value to others.
Quote from the book, "People tend to advocate and recruit for decisions they have made in their life. The people who are single will advise you to be single. The people who have kids will advise you to have kids. They do this because it helps them reinforce that they made the right decision in their own lives, not necessarily because it is the best move for you." When in your own life did you experience projection from other people, and how did you overcome it as a student entrepreneur?
So I think that's a really interesting thing that people should be aware of, no matter what situation you're in, is people like to feel like they've made the right choice. And so a lot of advice people give will kind of be, in some ways, reflecting on themselves, trying to reinforce that they've made the right decision. And I face a lot of this, particularly with my parents. There were a couple of times where I was working in the study abroad office at the University of Utah, and I wanted to leave to go back to school and learn how to be an entrepreneur. And to them, at first, they thought this was a totally crazy idea because I was leaving a salaried job with full-time benefits and a good position, which is kind of hard to come by these days. One of the most important things for my parents, particularly my father, growing up for him, was good job security and being able to have a consistent flow of income. And back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, that was an excellent idea and a very good philosophy to have in the time. In this day and age, where a lot of people who are in school have seen dramatic economic recessions, job security doesn't exactly exist in the same way that it did in the 60s and 70s. And in a lot of ways, a big economic shift can happen. And if you just have one job, one career, your whole life, and then all of a sudden, you know, the market crashes, then that's actually not very secure. You're only holding on by one piece of rope. Growing up in this very different environment, I've seen that different skills, different paths are more valuable for me, at least. It was a challenge at first, but by staying true to myself and really trying to understand what I wanted and what was valuable to me, and being able or being willing to take risks to go and get that, it paid off in the long run. And I'm proud to say that these days they're happy with the path I've taken and the choices I've made.
After pursuing your bachelor's degree in international relations, you received your master's in international affairs and global expertise, where you gained hands-on experience working with businesses and built a network of fellow entrepreneurs that referred you to paying customers. Could you tell us more about what that experience was like?
Yeah, so this is the MIAJ program at the University of Utah. And there was a lot of very interesting people, interesting students, interesting professors, and interesting other people associated with the program. What I really enjoyed about it is not only that it was international, and I just explained why I like that and traveling, but it was a very broad and flexible program. They had a couple of different branches, whether you were a student interested in working for the government or a nonprofit agency or an advocacy agency, or an international business. And so the students were allowed to kind of direct their education in a lot of interesting ways and take classes in the MBA program, the law school, or other graduate programs. So we were kind of orphans moving around to different parts of the school, and I thought that was really interesting because I could pick and choose the most interesting things from different schools and put that together. It also had connections around Salt Lake City to different international organizations like the World Trade Center. I think once a month or every few months they would have meetings and meetups to introduce students to ambassadors or high-profile business people, and I thought that was really a lot of fun. I kind of had a unique take on the program where most of the curriculum was aimed at preparing students to work for a large multinational organization, while I wanted to have just a small business that empowered me to travel along the way. And so there were a lot of times where I had to come up with custom coursework or a custom internship or challenge myself in unique ways. And luckily for the program, since it was new and very flexible and wanted to work with students however they wanted to fulfill their goals, and they were very flexible with that and allowed me to kind of pursue what I was interested in.
Who helped you as a university student pinpoint your strengths?
So an early professor that I worked with who was very helpful was Rob Webker, who's a professor here at the business school. And he was willing to work with me and helping me experiment with some really early business ideas I had. One of my first things I tried was creating an AdSense website, which is just a website based around a certain keyword that people were searching for in Google, but there wasn't a lot of other sites that had really dominated that keyword. So I had a website like plaidpants.org, where I wrote a couple of different articles about plaid pants for men, plaid pants for women, you know, where to buy the best plaid pants. And it would attract a little bit of traffic. And if people clicked on the ads that I had up on the site, then I'd make a nickel or something like that.
That's so good.
Yeah. And so he was really encouraging me to try things like this, experiment with things, and through that, learning my strengths. I also tried to do a custom leather jacket store online where you could log on and design a jacket almost in the same way that you can kind of design a video game character where, do you want stripes here? Do you want this many pockets? Do you want the motorcycle style or the cowboy style or whatever? As a result, experimenting with these things and kind of having the encouragement of a professor behind me, I had learned things like, I do like marketing, I do like creating websites, I do like exploring that side of businesses, and I don't care nearly enough about fashion to get into the leather jacket business. And so just through that process of experimentation and working with different people and being gently encouraged along the way, I kind of started to find my strengths and see where I really wanted to play.
How do students find their own Rob Wecker? How do they find the black sheep within academia, as you described it in your book, who will help them pinpoint their own strengths?
So I think that's one of the best parts about being a student. And you don't necessarily need to find a professor that will back you up, but I do think it is nice to have a mentor. And this kind of goes back into relationship building. And one big advantage that students have is there's a big cultural phenomena that happens around a student. No matter who you are, people are happy to help students, whether they're an entrepreneur, a business owner, your family, friends that understand that you're a student and you're hungry, so they're going to invite you to dinner every once in a while. And that's usually the extent that the students take advantage of that. They go to their friend's family's house for dinner if they, you know, live out of state or something like that. But as a student, you can approach a lot of interesting people very easily and just get started by saying, hey, I'm a student, I'm working on this project, and I'd like to ask you a few questions. Or, hey, I'm a student, I really admire who you are and what you've become. You know, I want to hear from you how you did this. And most people are going to be really honored that a student approached them and brought these questions. And even better if you really can tie it to schoolwork and get some credit for it. But I think that's an excellent starting point to reach out to a new mentor while you're chatting with them. See if there's a way that you can help them out and provide value to them, like I was saying earlier, and start to cultivate that relationship. And, you know, whether it's a professor or whether it's an author or just somebody you know that you admire down the street, those are all excellent ways to kind of cultivate mentorship in your own life.
That segues into the topic of self-directed education, which you talk about extensively in your book, The College Entrepreneur. And you shared with us an experience that you had with a professor who eventually gave you directed readings that gave you credit in college while you started your business, Conversion Cake, your conversion rate optimization-focused marketing company. Kyle, how can student entrepreneurs get college credit for working on their business?
There's a lot of great ways that a student can get college credit for working on their business. The first one, like I just said, is finding any excuse possible to include a business owner, somebody you admire, somebody you want to work with or be like in your schoolwork. And not every school paper is going to be helpful in that. But depending on your major, I recommend picking up a kind of a flexible minor that would give you some different options. And fortunately, here at the University of Utah and at many other universities, there's degrees. The undergraduate studies program has a totally customized major program. If your main field of study is something like engineering and it's very rigid and very structured, then consider adding a minor that would give you a little more flexibility to explore your interests and make connections with people. Also, customized internships are a really great way to get started with that. The Hinckley Institute of Politics offers custom internships, and I believe that Career Services has internships available that students can reach out to local businesses or somebody they want to work with. And if it meets certain criteria, they'll give you school credit to complete this internship. Start to build a relationship, see where you can add value, and be really proactive in doing your research, see what the requirements are, and create your own plan that fulfills those requirements. And not only will that get you school credit for reaching out and building relevant skills to what you want to do, but it will also make you eligible for different scholarships.
You also mentioned how eventually when you became an advisor with the study abroad department at the University of Utah, you deeply regretted not taking advantage of undergraduate research opportunities. Could you tell us more about that?
So undergraduate research is a fairly new thing that's happening across the United States, and different universities are approaching it differently. This is entrepreneurship in a lot of ways. It's investigating a problem, trying to understand it, and hopefully trying to find a way to solve this problem. And there's undergraduate research opportunities for every kind of student out there, whether it's art history. There's definitely a lot business and science areas. Some schools have kind of a predetermined or like a menu of different projects that students can work on. Some universities would allow a student to direct their own research. They have a good idea and kind of have the backing of a mentor at the program and another professor.
The University of Utah does both of those.
So that's an excellent way to, if you have a good idea and you want to investigate it, this could be a potential business down the road, to get some funding from your university to explore this idea.
A theme present throughout your book is that business is about building relationships, and that relationships are built on trust. Understanding your background as a musician, having to build that relationship with an audience, I understand where you come from with that background. But if you could add on to that, what other business philosophies have you adopted and developed over the years leading up to you writing The College Entrepreneur?
I think trust or relationships is a really big one, and I just want to expand on that one a little bit first. There's never been a big leap forward in my life. If I can think of all the times where I was like, this was a huge moment for me, it was never completely of my own drive or my own work. It was because of a relationship with somebody who had more leverage in the situation and made a bet on me because they trusted me. They knew me, and they wanted to see me succeed. And so I think that that's such a key part to succeeding in whatever endeavor you want to do. It's a totally important element to growing and developing yourself. Another one that's very closely related is generosity. And generosity with your ideas, generosity with your time, especially when you're young and you're new and you're trying to break into something. The best asset you have is your time. I just wrote this article recently about this. I talk about this guy named Garen Echenberry, and he, at this point in his life, didn't have any jobs and wanted to land a dream job. And something he did was write to a business or somebody interesting to him or even random people every day and give them 10 ideas that were well-researched and tried to be really helpful to these people. 10 ideas on how they could improve whatever they were working on. And from that, maybe half of them didn't respond at all. There was a few thank yous. There was, you know, several Skype calls that happened as it and potential future collaborations. And he actually got 5 what he calls dream job offers. I think that's really interesting because previously while working with student entrepreneurs in the Foundry,
the University of Utah's Foundry Business Incubator Program,
I noticed a couple of times where students were really hesitant to give away their ideas, that, and they were afraid somebody was going to steal it, or they didn't want, you know, somebody to run away with what they were doing. I don't think that that's a good philosophy to have. So be open with who you are, be open with what you're thinking, what you want to do, and if there's any way that you can help people with your ideas or your time, be absolutely generous with it and start to build those relationships.
All of those experiences eventually paved the way to much of the content that is in your recently published book, The College Entrepreneur. What was your process and workflow with writing The College Entrepreneur like for you?
So writing the book, it was a long road to even realize that what I was doing was writing a book. I actually tried to create an online course at first, which was an interesting adventure. And I started out just using a software called Trello, which is just kind of an online kind of whiteboard where you have different sticky notes moving different cards from the to-do, doing, and done lists. And I organized a lot of the different chapters, or at the time there were different lectures and different ideas, collecting my research, putting different links, and building out this idea over time. I put it together, created this course while I was living in a bungalow on this island called Koh Phangan in Thailand. And the audio quality was unfortunately spoiled by jungle noises like cicadas or small dogs running around barking, or roosters. This bungalow was on this farm with chickens running around. I was a little bit discouraged, kind of shelved the course. Tried again a couple months later, and I'm still living in Thailand, but I had an apartment this time, and so what I would do to preserve the audio was throw a blanket over my head and just talk into a mic there to kind of take care of all the ambient noise, which was a lot of fun, a challenging experience. And I launched the course and I still didn't feel good about it. I had a lot of the ideas and the practical information put together, but I didn't feel like there was much of a story or much of some like personality to the course. And so I wasn't really proud to market it. And after a couple of months, one of the clients I was working with in my business conversion cake, he ran a program called Self-Publishing School, where he helps people of any age, any skill set, any interest, write a book and self-publish it on Amazon. And after working with him, working with his content, and seeing what he was about, I thought that I should take a swing at that. I started writing 1,000 words every day, and I was lucky to have all of this kind of material already outlined, so it was easy to just start kind of ticking away and expanding on the work I had already done. And within about 3 months, I had the majority of the book together.
Speaking on the content of The College Entrepreneur and thinking about your potential readers or your audience, is finishing school with a degree and a startup the goal?
So I guess it depends on how you define startup. I don't know if you need to graduate or try and graduate with some innovative startup in any way. And I think in a lot of ways, just putting something together that you find interesting, building a brand around something, it doesn't even necessarily have to make money. For example, if you were a passionate skier and a passionate photographer, trying to build a website where you are exploring the skill of ski photography or landscape photography, writing about what you're doing, learning about what you're doing, and then trying to incorporate your coursework into building that, whether it's taking a photography class and seeing if you can use their resources to grow what you're doing and discuss that along the way, is just as powerful, or could be just as useful to the right kind of student, as creating some kind of new software, some kind of new app, or a new service, or a startup.
You mentioned the right kind of student. Who do you think would be the most receptive to what you teach in The College Entrepreneur?
The right kind of student is somebody who's willing to take some risks, who's willing to do something on their own without any instruction. From a very young age, we haven't been taught that. We've kind of been taught to follow the instructions. We've been given rubrics and guidelines, and if you follow those rubrics, then you get a good grade, and if you don't follow them, then that doesn't work. It's pretty uncomfortable when you first start out trying to just venture off into the wilderness of trying something new that you don't know what the result's going to be, where it's going to get you, or if how you invest your time is going to pay off. But just by starting and going and learning from the process and growing from it, if you are not afraid to do that, then you are the right kind of student for this.
When describing the myth, only business students can start businesses, you elaborated to say, the truth is an art student or a student from any other field of study is just as capable as a business student of starting a business. Your field of study and your personal interests give you a unique perspective. Why does it not matter what you study in college when it comes to starting up a business? Isn't finance and understanding technology essential for remaining sustainable? Aren't these learned in business school?
So perhaps for remaining sustainable, understanding accounting, understanding management, understanding some business fundamentals that are discussed in the business school are very important. But as an entrepreneur, you don't necessarily need to have all of those skills to get started. The primary skill and the most important one is to understand how you can provide value to somebody else. And by doing that, you need to have a lot of empathy with people, you need to understand the problem, and you need to find your unique way of solving it. And you can do that as an artist, you can do that as an anthropologist, or whatever field of study you choose to enter, there's definitely a value you can provide to people. That's one thing that students should always be thinking about is how will this directly add value to somebody.
For myth 8, a business takes a lot of time. You state, quote, "You could easily build a business that you ramp up for one season or part of the year and then spin down. You can also keep a small business running with just a few hours of work each week, as well as to go on and describe that college students, like much of our listeners, can hire their own help. How can a student entrepreneur learn what scale is appropriate for their endeavors? How do they reinforce that scale with others, such as their potential clients?"
You can be very flexible with what you create and how much time you invest into it. Of course, I'm not saying you're going to start a $1 million business with working only a couple hours a week. And certainly the results you get will be a factor of how much time you spend working on it. But that being said, I know that there's a lot of students who are very busy working on jobs to help them pay for tuition, working on their schoolwork, which is also very challenging. Just dedicating a little bit of time to creating a new relationship with somebody interesting or putting a new piece of content on a blog you're working on or putting together an offer for a local business that maybe could use your help in some way or another. Just whatever way you can add value. It shouldn't take 80 hours a week to get started or test and validate your ideas. I would suggest just starting very small, and again, start asking these questions. Where can I provide value? Who can I talk to next to figure out what I want to do? What kind of industry do I want to work in? Who do I want to work with? What kind of culture, company culture, would I like to work with? And start asking all of these questions and pursuing that as a student before you start building something.
Leveraging either time or money. I'm realizing more and more how much I'm either spending my time as a student entrepreneur, either with the exchange of my time or my money. And I think that that's such an interesting philosophical shift. Have you ever experienced that before?
Yeah, it's kind of a constant battle. I'm actually experiencing this a lot right now. I'm thinking about hiring a virtual assistant. And this could be somebody in the Philippines that helps me schedule social media posts, or I do hire a lot of people, just like I have somebody who proofs all of my posts.
Why the Philippines?
The Philippines is an excellent place to get virtual assistants because the general level of English speaking is pretty high there. Their working rates, you can pay somebody really well for Philippines standards, but it's not too expensive for even a student's budget. There's lots of different services depending on what you want to do. I know people that have set up different processes or different guides to say, I want you to search different Instagram feeds, find interesting quotes, find interesting content, compile them all in this spreadsheet for me so I can kind of pick these things out. Or me populating a spreadsheet, here's some quotes for my book, here's some different images I've taken over the years. I want you to put these together in Canva, schedule them on Instagram, and do that. There's a lot of things you can do like that that will save you a lot of time on the front end, without a huge investment in your money.
I want to segue our conversation into the topic of marketing, specifically social media and building an online presence, which you talk about extensively in The College Entrepreneur. Definitely, we're in an age where students are imbued in social media. When is it the right time for a student entrepreneur to start building their own personal brand?
So I think that a personal brand is a really important tool. And though social media is a great way to create that, I definitely encourage students not to only think of it as how many followers you have. It's the quality of people that you know and the quality of relationships that you have. A personal brand is that moment when two people are conversing that you can really help. They have a topic, and all of a sudden there's this kind of moment, and they're like, you need to talk to this person. This person is exactly the person that can help you. Or
symbiosis.
Yeah. What's great about social media or building a personal brand and starting your at university is every little conversation that you have, if you kind of know your passion or you're exploring this and you're exploring yourself, write these experiences down and share them because they're very valuable. And I had a lot of problems, even though I'm kind of a prolific writer. I was really scared for a long time to be like, oh, well, I don't have anything new to say or anything original to say. And I think one good way to start is not trying to have the best ideas in the world that reach a million people. Try and figure out the smallest group of people possible that you can help with what you do. So if that's creating a Facebook group for five of your friends, and you're just talking about the certain thing you want to work on. If you know a couple of your different friends are going through a certain problem that you've managed to solve in your own way, write a little article about how you managed to solve it and start from there. Again, this is just simple solving people's problems and, you know, being really focused in where you add value and who you can add value to. And as you continue to explore your interests and develop them, hopefully your personal brand reflects that. I know a girl, sister of a good friend of mine, she's studying neuroscience right now. She ended up starting a neuroscience club and is putting together a little Squarespace site. She got funding from the student government to attend an interesting convention in Florida right now. And she's going to be kind of writing about what she's learning and what's come together. And I think that that's an excellent example of how you can start to collect your experiences somewhere. This is what a resume tries to do, is putting together what you've learned and attracting a following and building attention around something like that. Instead of having this kind of dead, flat piece of paper in a stack of hundreds of other pieces of papers and a job
application. It's a living document on the internet.
Yeah. This is your trail of magic in a lot of ways that shows that you have interests, you're working hard on growing them, and you're building connections with different people.
Magic in the sense of the act of inspired action?
Yeah. The creativity. It's showing that you want to develop yourself. You're not just going for the bare minimum of what it takes to get a grade and get a degree, but you actually are interested in this. And that's going to make all the difference, whether you are trying to really start your own business down the road or you just want to get a job in an industry or in a field that you really enjoy.
Reading your book inspired me to look through my own social media accounts. And I found myself a couple of hours later having deleted almost a year's worth of old Facebook posts back from 2011. At this point in my life, I was stuck on this idea of building a personal brand without knowing what my value was. I wondered if this is a common occurrence for young people, and especially young aspiring entrepreneurs. Kyle, for the student who is considering being an entrepreneur while attending college, but is ultimately still on the path of self-discovery, what can they do now to develop their brand so that when they're ready, they have a strong foundation to build off of?
Kind of speaking to the story you just told me, I feel the same way. I have a journal that I write in regularly. And if I go back to entries a year ago, or God forbid, even farther than that ago, I'm usually thinking like, oh man, what an idiot. Like, this guy was thinking this. Like, yes. You know, I feel a little embarrassed for myself.
Right.
But in a lot of ways, if you reframe that, that just shows how far you've come in that time. And you should feel that way, especially as a young person. Every year you should look back on yourself and be like, man, what an idiot. I'm so much smarter than that now. And you should be grateful for it. You should start and you should just always be working really hard to find what you really care about. And yet you'll be making mistakes. Like I said, I made a random leather jacket website that definitely didn't work out, or plaidpants.org website, which is totally goofy and weird. And just take those failures and take those mistakes and build on them and use that as a compass to correct your course and find something that works even better for you. So start now and be bold with it.
Be bold. To sort of summarize our talk, the idea that struck me the most in the college entrepreneur that was present throughout the book was the fact that even once a student commits to a business idea, it's more about the process of learning how to achieve those goals than about bringing their product to market. The skills that are learned in one area, whether through undergraduate research, directed readings, as we've talked about, a customized major, will eventually lead to new opportunities in general.
The big thing that I want to leave students with is to just start. One of the things that really plagued me as a student, especially when I was trying to pick my major, was it almost felt like marriage in some ways, where as soon as I picked this, this is the rest of my life. And in some ways, it was kind of what I was craving. I just wanted to have, like, you do just this one thing and focus on that and everything's going to be okay. That's not how the world is, and that's not how life is. And you can ask 10 people that you know that have been in the workforce for 5 to 10 years, how many of them are actually doing their major? Very few of them, not a majority of them, will say that. That also spills over into the business you start or what endeavors you try. Try something, experiment with it, learn from it, grow from it, and if it fails, that's cool, that's great. You should be proud that you've done something that you've invested in and that's really failed. Take the risk and fail and try again, and you'll have a little bit more knowledge, a little bit more experience, and you'll be able to direct yourself a little bit better the next time around.
Quote from your book, "It's sad to imagine for one person, but now imagine it on the scale of millions of people. How many brilliant technologies have gone uninvented, works of art left uncreated, secrets gone undiscovered because of this compromise." Why would students compromise their dreams, Kyle?
That quote comes from kind of one of the biggest challenges I think the world is facing. There's a lot of discussion right now around environmental crises or political crises, and I think those are important, but something that is relatively not discussed is what Ken Robinson calls the human resources crisis. And that is just people aren't plugging into what makes them excited, what they're passionate about or what excites them, and they're not connecting with a deep energy inside themselves to improve themselves, to move their lives forward. A lot of people still have this kind of expectation set up, having a stable job and security, and they kind of prioritize getting that first. There's nothing wrong with having a steady job or a salary. Those are absolutely important things, but I don't think it's a good price to pay if you are in a job or in an environment that doesn't inspire you to become better every day. I think it's absolutely important that for the health of your body, your mind, and your spirit, that you challenge yourself a little bit every day and become a little bit better. And so a lot with entrepreneurs, I've noticed they're always trying to improve themselves, not necessarily just with their business, but they're trying to improve their physical health so they can think more clearly. They're trying to improve their spiritual health so they can be a little bit happier and see different opportunities they're working through the challenges they're facing. And I think that's really important in this day and age.
When you say spirituality, you're referring to a connection of with oneself, with their inner sense of self.
Yeah. I have a view of spirituality that Stephen Pressfield kind of describes in his book, The War of Art, which anybody listening to this podcast should probably, that's the first thing you should probably do is go and buy that book. He kind of alludes to heaven being inside you. You can bring that out through becoming more skillful, becoming better. It doesn't necessarily need to be a business skill or a money-making skill. It can be rock climbing, it can be dancing, it can be skiing. But by getting better at something and working hard to improve yourself, you bring heaven to this world. And I think that that's a really beautiful picture to paint and something really inspiring to encourage you to get up and invest a little bit of time improving yourself instead of giving into the temptation of watching one more Netflix episode or going out and chasing a Pokemon.
So essentially, entrepreneurship to you in some ways is a reflection of the inner work that people achieve in their own lives. It's a reflection of the value that they discover through that process.
Absolutely. I think you learn a lot about yourself by through the challenges that you face. And, you know, it's not always easy. It's not always fun. It's not always great. But any day where you learn something about yourself and become a little bit better and challenge yourself and become stronger as a result, I think is a good day.
Kyle, thank you for inspiring students to take necessary risks for their personal self-growth and for being on View LaSonde Student Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
You can learn more about Kyle Cameron Gray's book and his expert insights into entrepreneurship at kylegray.io. To learn more about LaSonde Entrepreneurship Institute at the University of Utah, please visit lasonde.utah.edu. I'm Jay Abubo, and thanks for listening. Be resilient and stay gold.